G'day and welcome back to the Raw Rugby Podcast. Christy Doran here to bring you all up to speed with Round 5 Super Rugby teams and joined by my boss and a man that joined me right through the Rugby World Cup, Tony Harper. Harps, good to see your friendly face and you're back from Japan too.
Yeah, there were some fun days at the World Cup and I had a decompress for 3 months in Japan riding powder. I've got to tell you that it was a pretty average season over there, and then the day I left, it dumped, and yesterday there were 70 centimetres on my old joint. So, yeah, I've had to unsubscribe from many different social media platforms. It's hard, like you don't want to completely block Japan because apparently Quade Cooper and Bernard Foley and Will Genia and a few others are playing footy over there, but I just do not want to see any more snow porn for the next few months until Perisher kicks on, Christy.
Well, you've missed out, left out one of the other Aussies that is in Japan at the moment, and that's my co-host on a Monday, which is Matt Tamua. So thanks for just snubbing, Matt.
Well, I don't consider him to be a footy player anymore. I just consider him to be a massive media personality. I'm absolutely loving how he's developing as a podcaster. I mean, it started out like he was definite second fiddle, but now, like, mate, I don't know about co-hosting anymore. I think it's like Matt Tamua Show with ... Christy Doran.
Yeah, it won't be long before I'm out of a job. But great to have Matt, and the Monday pods that generally go out first thing on a Tuesday morning have been going great, and thanks for the feedback that has been provided throughout the last few weeks, enjoying it. And it was awesome speaking to Mick Byrne, who's Fijian drew a take on the Waratahs Saturday afternoon, so it'll be a cracking matchup. Hey, let's stop talking about the past. Let's look forward, and let's look forward to the
Well, that's fair enough. I'm just glad you didn't get Mick Byrne on for the rapid fire edition, let me tell you, because one of his anecdotes would last longer than this podcast go.
All right, mate, you have to listen to the podcast earlier in the week to understand that joke. But hey, it's an intriguing kind of stage of the super season, because in a 12-team comp with eight sides progressing through to the finals, it's still everyone is very much in with a chance. But if you're the Crusaders, if you're the Western Force, you're trying to find your first win. And if you're the Waratahs or the Melbourne Rebels, you definitely want to be keeping pace with those in the top four or five, which is like the Brumbies and the Queensland Reds. But we're going to start first game. New Plymouth is the venue, and it's the Hurricanes and the Melbourne Rebels. Can you bring us up to speed with a few of the changes, please, Harps?
Yeah, we've got top of the table Hurricanes hosting seventh place Rebels, and I reckon they've done quite well to be in seventh considering all the dramas that are going on there. I mean, some of the drama this week around Filippo Dalgunu again, which you can talk to a little later. They've rested Taniela Tupou from the start. He was obviously dragged in the first half last week, and I know you've got a bit of insight as to why. On the other side, the Canes have made 13 changes to the 15 in the starting lineup. And I thought, Christy, I'd go and spend a few minutes on each of those 13. Would you like that, or do you want me to just race through that one?
It's a hard pass, please, but just what are some of the
things? Jordy Barrett is back. Okay. The highlight is Jordy Barrett is back. He's back in their team. So the 4-0 Hurricanes, you have to say they're quite well set up there. Sam Talakai comes in for Tupou from the start, Tupou on the bench. And then Angelo Smith comes into the pack as well. I mean, what do you see the situation there and how they've kind of been able to guide their way through this, and maybe some insight into Philly D's situation at the moment?
Yeah, that was a tumultuous one with Filippo Dalgunu, and it's obviously been reported pretty widely over the last few days after I revealed the news earlier that Dalgunu had chosen to stand down from last week's match, and that was a matter of hours before kickoff against the Reds, and that's such a disruption because he's the outside centre. They've already lost Matt Proctor. He's filling in the outside centre. It's generally the person that leads the defensive line, and it's one of the most important positions in the defence. It rests over a $7,000 reimbursement fee that he's owed, and this could drag on for a little while before there's a resurrection there, but it's good that he's returned to training because he missed training on Monday. He was back there on Tuesday, but clearly the Rebels had made the decision that with him not being there a day earlier, that he wasn't going to play. I think that's fair enough, standards and so forth, but it does mean that there's another change to the midfield.
Yeah, so just to be clear, though, do we feel that he is now happy to play, even though, you know, under my understanding of the situation, they can't officially pay him his $7,000 because of the situation they're in. Like, is he, as far as you know, happy to return being owed that money still?
I'm not sure if there's a resurrection there yet, just yet. So I'd have to actually put through a call or two, but it does go to the ongoing concerns around the Rebels. He's a creditor there now. I can't imagine that he would have been paid and fixed up, because it does open up a can of worms about why one person gets their money back and why another person doesn't. So that would just be my instinct. I can't say that for facts. But, in regards to the early, and you made reference, Taniela Tupou, you're spending millions of dollars on a guy to come to the Melbourne Rebels and you pull him off after 33, 34 minutes. It's not a great look, but I think you've got to see it from the bigger picture, which firstly, the Rebels' efforts around the ruck, they were getting blitzed there. There was way too much space. I think the type five forwards really struggled on a whole. And someone like a Sam Talakai, really good person, firstly. Secondly, high work rate. And thirdly, they don't want to risk necessarily a Taniela Tupou getting injured with the pace so high earlier in the game and pushing his workload. So there was a combination of factors of why there was the early changes last week. But Josh Canham's another victim. He's gone back to the bench and he's had a pretty poor start to the season too. So there are changes up front, as you made mention, a couple in the front row, a couple in the second row, Lucas Ripley back at the outside centre. It's going to be a tough afternoon, evening for the Rebels, I think. And you look at the Hurricanes, you know, you might rest Cam Royguard, but you bring back TJ Perenara. That's pretty handy in itself. And then look in the second half with the Safa Umua coming on to inject his big physical frame at hooker in the second half. I think the Rebels, they've got to be in touching distance at halftime, otherwise they'll get run over the top.
Look, it might be a bit of a naive question, but 13 changes in a 15, do you think Rebels maybe look at that as a little sign of disrespect for what they're able to do, or do you think that's kind of more a show of the incredible depth that the tabletoppers have?
Well, Brad Shields, captain, back for his first minutes, Karifi quality open side flanker, Tyrell Lomax is up front, Rayasi onto the left wing. He's a try scorer. So I think it's just really good depth management. And if you look at the guys that are coming on, if an Asafa Umua was not coming on in the second half, I start to think, yeah, maybe they are taking this game for granted. But considering that there's, you know, Josh Morby as well, really talented outside back, Braden Iosi, who's been one of the real, probably alongside Fraser McWright as the star back rower to start the competition, I think the Hurricanes, they'll be up for it, knowing that these are sorts of games, if you can get bonus points, it makes the rest of your season and your season planning so much easier. It's not the only game on Friday night, Harps. The second one is the Brumbies and Moana Pacifica. Last year, Moana Pacifica came out of the blocks really well. They jumped out. The Brumbies had to play catch-up footy and they've been struck by some injuries. Run us through the changes, please.
So you've got Blake Schott, Len Iketau and Andy Muirhead all missing this one. And I don't know, that seems like a fair impact to have on them, although the Brumbies should still have enough there. Charlie Cale comes into number 8. Interesting stat that I noticed today, that he actually leads in line-out steals across the competition with 5 from just 2 games. Everyone else who's got fewer than him, but mostly the ones who are close on 4 have all played 4 games. So that's he's really made an impact there, but that kind of backs up that eye test for him.
Yeah, that's a good stat. I didn't know that. I thought Jed Holloway has been really impressive in that kind of area, as has Nick Frost from an Australian perspective. Cale, good return. It's a ideal return for the Brumbies, given that they've suffered a few injuries throughout that win across the ditch against the Highlanders. Darcy Swain captains the side in the tight five. That took me by surprise, especially there was...
Well, there's discipline issues there too, right? So we've had discipline issues with him as well. I don't know, it's going to be so interesting to see the guy who's been at the centre of several very high-profile cards in Wallaby Gold actually be the calming voice, the calming presence. How's that going to work, do you feel?
Good question. I actually think Stephen Larkin's trying to empower him, trying to go, you know what, mm-hmm. you are the captain now. It's about time you show that leadership, because we know that he's a good player. He's played Test rugby a couple of years ago. And he comes in for Nick Frost, who's back on the bench. And I actually, you know, their depth is being stretched, particularly in the outside backs. No side likes to lose three guys in one match. But I think it's really good management from Steve Larkin. Not only have you got Lonigan and James Slipper coming off the bench, you've got Nick Frost, you've got Tom Hooper. And this is the other big one, Ryan Lonigan on the bench, who's been the interim captain with Alan Allen retire. Injured. What I love about that, Harrison Goddard comes in at nine. He's a guy that's had a few years of professional rugby, both at the Waratahs, up at the LA Giltinis, the Rebels once upon a time. And when you're talking about management, and we'll get to the Waratahs in a little while, that's an opportunity to just give more minutes to your wider depth, because when you do get injuries, you don't want to be throwing in someone who hasn't touched the ball or played many minutes. And got them into their legs. So I think it's really smart from Larkham.
On Lonigan, him coming off the bench, like if he's to play for the Wallabies this season, you would imagine it would be probably as a bench role player, as a coming on after, say, a Tate McDermott. Like, does that kind of help refine that aspect of the game? Like, is there enough difference in there that it could, help from a Wallaby perspective too as we push deeper into the season?
I think if we're going to be looking at the nines and who might start a game and who might not, I think Tate McDermott's clearly featured prominently for the Wallabies, particularly under Eddie Jones. Joe Schmidt might want to have a completely different nine. We don't really know necessarily if he wants to have a running nine threat right from the outset. But if you look at someone like a Danny Kerr, who's just chalked up his 100th game for England recently, he's a guy that provides the impact, the spark. And to me, he's a bit more similar to a Tate McDermott. And he's played the role historically throughout his career as coming on in the last 20 minutes and lifting the pace of the game. I could see that more as a Tate McDermott going forward and a Ryan Lonigan starting, someone who's a bit more of a controller, sets the tempo, really good pass left and right, and then you manipulate the ruck either side. So I'm not sure. I think it's just more around game management and ensuring that your depth gets minutes. But good question. They're up against Moana Pacifica, two from four, and probably exceeded expectations so far.
Yeah, they're up in eighth place, right? So last season they only had the one win on the final day against the Tars. Interesting to see Christian Leiliafano back on deck. He's backing up as a starter 2 weeks running. What has he still got? What can he bring? Is he still at that Super Rugby Pacific level, up against obviously Noah? How do you kind of see that playing out?
I think it's a really good test for Noah Lolosio. Christian had his best game by a country mile against the Waratahs last year, and it probably helped his test cases, his World Cup ambitions, where he ended up going to France. I remember you and I watching him in St Etienne go around. But look, I think Moana Pacifica have got to get to the stage where they move past Leiliafano, I think, and Will Havili, who's on the bench in the 22 jersey once again this week. He's a guy that I think is supremely talented and can play 10-15. Leiliafano just brings a real sense of calmness to the side. He's generally speaking makes the right decision, but I'd say that he's not nearly as accurate he once was, particularly off the tee. But you know that when Leiliafano is out there, that he's just going to be that stabilising influence for a Moana side. He knows Canberra, Bruce Stadium like the back of his hand. So that's probably another reason why he's out there in the 10 jersey this week. And I think the Brumbies should be way too good for Moana Pacifica despite their injuries. But
yeah, agree.
They will want to start well. Perhaps the game I'm actually most looking forward to this weekend is the Jura and the Waratahs, Churchill Park and Lautoka. What do you think's going to happen here?
I think we should head to the airport now and get there, sit on the hill, crack open a few carvers and just mellow out and enjoy this one. I mean, it is a bucket list game, isn't it, for any fan. I would love to see Super Round played there in future. I know that financial reasons against that, but I just think that's got to be on, on our list. My only ever trip to Fiji, I watched a bunch of hotel workers play sevens against each other, and it was epic. So I can't imagine what it's going to be like sitting in the on the hills watching this one. Max Jorgensen, the Doran Player of the Year, is back at 15 for the Waratahs. Mahe Vaillani comes in after he's missing out last week, and the Tars having to go to like a fourth choice hooker in that position, and Frank Lomani comes back for the Drua in their big changes. But wow, going to be a big one, this one.
Yeah, and following actually up from what you were saying there, Harps, around a bucket list kind of thing, I heard a great anecdote just the other day where one of the stand producers was directing the broadcast of a Fiji Drua game, and I think it's Hamish France who was the director there, and he's gone to get Camo 9 to take the shot, and unfortunately Camo 9 had aborted his post because he joined the 15,000 fans to cheer on his side. So it made me laugh. But the Tars have got a, and Jake Golden's actually even said it, they've just got a, they can't afford to fall into what the Drua do, which is they love the open, expansive nature of rugby, of offloads and unstructured counter attack. The Tars have got to be set piece focused. They've got to play a real kick kind of strategy, I think, and just simplify their game plan. But it's a big one for Darren Coleman and his ambitions to get a contract extension. So, yeah, a couple of big changes, but good to see Max Jorgensen at 15. His kicking game will be really important alongside Joey Walton, I think, at 12.
Look, we've done a Wallabies power rankings on the site, and we threw Teddy Wilson in there in the number nines. He can't even get in the bench for the Tars. Can you... Like, talk me through what you think the thinking there is. Is it just management of him, or do we think a trick is being missed here because the kid is a gun, right?
I think a big trick is being missed. Teddy Wilson, junior Wallaby skipper, obviously the son of former Wallaby David. He's a guy that's a left footer, got a really good pass, but he's been used so sparingly under Darren Coleman over the last couple of seasons. And we know that DC loves Jake Gordon. He's been playing 70 minutes plus most matches. I just don't think you can afford to do that, particularly in Fiji where it's going to be humid. There's stories of the Crusaders vomiting at full time and just being completely out of their feet. Jack Grant is an experienced player. I think he's in his late 20s. He's been to England. He's come back. He was previously there in 2022. I think Australian rugby's got to be really careful about Teddy Wilson because he needs minutes, firstly, but he's getting frustrated and he might be lost from the Waratahs unless there's some serious changes. And I think Rugby Australia themselves are even concerned and watching on going, what's going on? Because we've seen in the past Australian sides go really heavy on one player to try to eke out wins, perhaps because the depth hasn't been there. You know, Michael Hooper used to play 80 minutes every match. Fraser McWright's doing it these days. Tom Warden at the Western Force is playing 70 minutes most games at hooker. It's just too much. You've got to be able to trust your depth, and that's why I like Stephen Larkin's decision to give Harrison Goddard some minutes. Anyway, I think this game, not going to be much in it, but I'm tipping the Drua. Who are you tipping?
I'm tipping the Drua as well. I mean, you talk about open and expansive. Let's give one more plug for the chat between you, Matt, and Mick Byrne earlier in the week. Like, talk about open and expansive. That guy's got it. I love that he's aligned to a team that likes to play it, you know, free and easy. That's a guy that when we go, Christy, we're having beers with him post-match, pre-match, maybe even during the match. Who knows? But Mick.
We're certainly, he did text me after saying, yeah, I've got a room anytime I want to go, so I might take up that. And the Johnny Walker scenario he was talking about. Three games left and four on this Saturday, so it's a big one. But the Chiefs and the Highlanders should be a cracker in a New Zealand derby.
Yeah, so the Chiefs and the Highlanders, you've got Amone Narawa coming back. He, as you'll recall, before the World Cup, he was picked in that All Blacks squad, had to pull out last minute. Ian Foster spoke really strongly about the disappointment that he felt. So it's great that he's finally back on the field. Anton Leonard-Brown misses the game through concussion. And the Highlanders are bringing Reece Patchell back at number 10, while Ethan de Groot misses out up front.
Yeah, and no Sonny Tokiaho for the Chiefs as well. That'll be different for the Chiefs because he's such a big ball carrier for them. The other one, Quintipiah, back in the midfield wearing the number 12 jersey. Mm-hmm. So he provides a fair bit of directness for Damien McKenzie. I like the look at the Chiefs, but I think the Highlanders, a couple of important ins. Parry Parkinson, another one. He was really good for the first few rounds before missing a week or two. I think this game might be closer than more people imagine, but I'm tipping the Chiefs. The Blues and Crusaders. Can the Crusaders win a game, Hans?
Not this week and not next week, but I think the week after maybe. I really think they're going to go 0-6 before they get themselves on the board. They are only second last on the table, just ahead of the Force, of course. They've got one change, so it's not even as if, you know, they've obviously had these incredible injury issues and players out for the season and players out for groups of weeks like Scott Barrett, Will Jordan, of course, but only one change. Zach Gallagher is going out and he's been replaced by Jamie Hannah. And for the Blues, Patrick Tuipulotu is back in the 15 and playing 100th game for the team.
Good to see him. He's a really lovely man. Saw him over at the Super Rugby launch in Auckland early in the year. But he will return. He'll take back the captaincy. And he's just a guy that, you know, you think about the Crusaders who are missing Sam Whitelock and other experienced leaders. Well, Tuipulotu is like that guy for the Blues. He's just got so much experience and quality. It's a pretty good looking pack that. And Tuipulotu, look, you could see how big they were compared to the Waratahs last mm-hmm. year. That back row is humongous. I think the Blues were pretty poor last week. Papali'i spoke about the physicality of the game out of the Tars, so it'll be interesting to see.
It was an awful game, wasn't it?
Like it was shocking.
I was on live blog. You were at the game. We kind of connected afterwards, and I wanted a sanity check on whether that was just a dire match to sit through. And I got to an hour in, I was like, oh, can I just hand this live blog over to one of our fabulous commenters on the Raw to take it from here, because I would like to go and bash my toes with a hammer to do something more rewarding. But yeah, I think, you know, that they certainly didn't. Well, also the goal kicking of Stephen Perifetta was just that case of the yips is probably as bad as you've seen in many a year at this level, right?
Yeah, exactly. So perhaps an opportunity for him, or will he feel the pressure there? But I think the Blues will be too good. I think at home there's unfinished business for them off the back of losing to the Crusaders in last year's semi-final, and I think they lost as well throughout the regular season. So Vern Cotter's side, it's a big one for them. No Rico Ioane, so Bryce Heen and Lamb are in the midfield, and you just look at the potency in the back line with Clark, Talia and Sullivan. I think they'll be too good. The last one, an Australian derby over in Perth. It's a really big game for the Reds to continue their momentum ahead of hosting the Brumbies next week. The Western Force are just desperate to get back to play some good rugby, and if they can take it deep, they might be in with the chance. Run us through some of the changes there.
Yeah, the Reds are really the team of the nation at the moment, aren't they? They're like, they hold all our hopes, and they're, you know, playing some really exciting football. They look a decent challenger. Hunter Paisami returns for them this week, and so does Tom Liner, having sat out after he was crunched the week before. For the Force, Whitey's back starting in the nine, and Sam Spinks at outside centre. I wanted to ask about Nick White and his move. Obviously, he's gone from you know, a team that routinely challenges to one that's now rooted at the foot of the table. Simon Cron, as you reported post-match last week, had some really strong words to say about how bad they were. How do you reckon he's kind of feeling about that move right now? Do you think he'd still be, you know, positive and upbeat about the shift he's made there, or do you think it'd be weighing on him a bit, especially as you look towards the Wallabies a bit later?
I think we know that winning teams generally help selection cases, but I think that's more for younger players than older players. And you look at someone like an Aaron Smith who was with the Highlanders, and whilst they won the comp in 2015 and were challengers again a year later, they pretty quickly fell off once guys like Sopawanga and their forward pack started to leave, Waisaki Naholo, another one. So I think Whitey will know that he can still play a role. The fact of the matter is he missed last week, which was their worst performance. So that goes to show by having experience, having someone like a Nick White who demands quality. He's an important figure. Interestingly, he's spoken to Joe Schmidt, so Joe Schmidt will have also noticed and I'm sure will want to pick the brain of a Nick White who's so experienced. How will he be feeling? I think he'll just see it as a challenge. And if he can get the force to increase and further better their performances, I think that both puts the force obviously on the upwards trajectory, but I think it only enhances his reputation too. The fact of the matter is the Western Force's backline will only really thrive if the Force can get a set piece that's just getting parity or winning their own ball. There's been too many lineouts that have been missed. There's big pressure on Tom Horton. He's got to get that lineout humming, and that obviously is a complete pack effort. The scrum was perhaps a little bit better last week, but they're going to get a good challenge against improving Reds pack themselves. But Tom Franklin, Jeremy Williams, Tim Anstey, they're the guys that I'm looking at. Carlo Tizzano's probably been a bit quieter to start the season than he would have hoped. I can't see the Force winning this game, but they might be able to cause some headaches. I think in the second half, we'll just start to see a little bit more depth on show for the Reds. They'll bring on guys like Josh Nasser, Jeffrey Tumonga Allen, Cormac Daly, and you compare that to the Western Force and the guys that they'll bring on, and it's Ben Funnell, it's a pretty inexperienced Josh Bartlett, and so forth. So that's where perhaps the game could be won or lost.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at the playup.com.au odds, and the line is set at 11.5 points. That kind of surprises me a bit, but going on what you're saying there, that it doesn't or it wouldn't necessarily be a shock to you if the margin's within that.
Yeah, I could see if the Reds get out of the blocks like they did against the Rebels, I can't see them. I can see them winning by 30 points, given the pace that they play at. But the Western Force typically have made games niggly for oppositions, and they've had a bit of success against the Reds outside of last year's Super Round, where they were obliterated. But I think you'll see a response. There's always responses when you have one of your worst performances, and Simon Cron's that sort of guy that will be able to simplify and go in strongly on one or two areas to fix. And if they do that, the Reds better be prepared.
I'll just fly through the other odds while we're here. Fiji and Drua against the Waratahs. The Drua are 152 to the Tahs 255. The Hurricanes start 107 favourite to the $8.50 Rebels. The Brumbies are $1.16 to Pacifica's 5.25. The Chiefs are $1.16 to the Highlanders 5.25. And the Blues are $1.28 to the Crusaders 3.70.
Well, there you go. Okay. Well, it probably tells you pretty nicely where the sides are positioned. If you're going to get on it, I think Burke and the Highlanders outside chance, maybe on the line. Hey, thanks, Tony Harper, for joining the Royal Rugby Podcast. Good to bring everyone up to speed, and hopefully see you again soon.
Well, it's always a pleasure. Because we don't work in offices together anymore, we work remotely. It's actually been a decent half an hour to see that you're actually out there producing some content. So really, really cool.
On that note, I better zip and go and get into more of it. But look forward to getting into your earways early next week with Matt Tamua for another edition of the Royal Rugby Podcast. Until then, cheers. Thank you.
the road.